This is Bob Carroll, creator of the Skeptic's Dictionary and the blog Unnatural Acts That Can Improve Your Thinking. Welcome to another episode of Unnatural Virtue. In this and future episodes, I'll be offering some brief comments on topics in critical thinking, skepticism, and science. Today's topic is confabulation. Have you ever told a story that you embellished by putting yourself at the center when you knew that you weren't even there? Or have you ever been absolutely sure you remembered something correctly, only to be shown incontrovertible evidence that your memory was wrong? No, of course not. But you probably know or have heard of somebody else who juiced up a story with made-up details, or whose confidence in his memory was shown to be undeserved by evidence showing his memory was false. Confabulation is an unconscious process of creating a narrative that is believed to be true by the narrator, but is demonstrably false. The term is popular in psychiatric circles to describe narratives of patients with brain damage or a psychiatric disorder who make statements about what they perceive or remember that are known to be either completely fictional or in great part fantasy, but are believed to be true by the patient. Neurologist Oliver Sacks writes of a patient with a brain disorder that prevented him from forming new memories. Even though Mr. Thompson could not remember who Sacks was, each time Sacks visited him, he created a fictional narrative about their previous encounters. Sometimes Sacks was a butcher that Thompson knew when he worked as a grocer. A few minutes later, he'd recognize Sacks as a customer and create a new fictional narrative. Sacks described Thompson's confabulations as an attempt to make meaning out of perceptions that he could only relate to events in long-term memory. You might think, poor fellow, he has to construct his memories and fill in the blank parts with stuff he makes up. Yes, he does. But so do you, and so do I. There's an overwhelming amount of scientific evidence on memory that shows memories are constructed by all of us, and that the construction is a mixture of fact and fiction. Something similar is true for perception. Our perceptions are constructions that are a mixture of sense data processed by the brain and other data that the brain supplies to fill in the blanks. Now there is a body of growing scientific research that shows confabulation is not something restricted to psychiatric patients or gifted fantasizers who believe they were abducted by aliens for reproductive surgery. The evidence shows that many of the narratives each of us produce on a daily basis to explain how we feel, why we did something, or why we made a judgment that we made, are confabulations, mixtures of fact and fiction that we believe to be completely true. This research should give us pause. Many of us accuse others of making stuff up when they present arguments that are demonstrably full of false or questionable claims. But it's possible that people who make stuff up aren't even aware of it. They might really believe the falsehoods they utter. Studies on what is now called choice blindness demonstrate this point. Researchers showed males two pictures of female faces and asked them which one they found more attractive. The men were then asked why they chose the one they did. The photos were then turned face down, and a trick was played on the subjects. One of the photos was turned over, and sometimes the photo turned over was not the one the male selected. Yet, in a majority of the trials, the subject didn't even notice the switch and proceeded to provide details as to why he selected the one he didn't actually select. The majority of subjects are known to have confabulated, but it's possible that they all did. Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky are famous for having discovered that many of us answer an easier question than the one that is posed. These subjects were asked which female face they found more attractive. As far as I know, there was no attempt on the part of the researchers to discover what criteria the subjects would use to determine how they measure attractiveness in females. It is likely that most of us have no problem deciding whether we find a person attractive. But how many of us have ever reflected on the criteria we use in making that decision? If there is just one photo to look at, most of us would instantly decide whether the face is attractive. But will we know why we feel the way we do? Our brain must have gone through some sort of decision-making process in an instant. What data our brain was using to arouse our feelings is unknown to us at the moment we decide that the face is or isn't attractive. The same would be true for making a comparison between two faces. We might do it instantly, and there is no way we could be conscious of the criteria our brain is using to drive our feelings. So when asked why we find face A more attractive than face B, we make stuff up. For all we know, When asked which face is more attractive, we answer not that question, but another one, such as, which girl would I want to kiss? Or, which girl looks friendlier? Or, which girl would be more likely to find me attractive? Yet, when we give our reasons for our choice to the experimenter, we may say things like, she has a lovely smile, her hairdo is very nice, she looks like she'd be fun to party with, she reminds me of some actress I like. The actual reasons for our choice may or may not coincide with what we say, and we usually have no way of knowing whether we're telling the truth, even though we believe we are. We might state what we think a man should say when describing a woman as attractive, rather than state or even know why we really find one face more attractive than another. The researchers who did the study on face choices also did a study called Magic at the Marketplace, Choice Blindness for the Taste of Jam and the Smell of Tea. Many people had no problem explaining why they favored a jam, even though, when given a second taste of what they thought was the one they selected, it wasn't. Several other studies have found that confabulation is rather common among us ordinary folk who have not yet been diagnosed with a brain disorder. We can speculate as to why we confabulate. Perhaps we make up stories that seem plausible to us, even though we don't really have a clue as to their accuracy, for the same reason that Mr. Thompson did. We confabulate to make sense out of our experience, our feelings, our perceptions, and our memories. Unlike Mr. Thompson, though, most of us have brains that can access vast quantities of data in an instant, but these brain processes are taking place below the level of consciousness. We're often not really aware of why we're constructing the stories we do. It may be hard to believe, but the evidence is overwhelming that we don't know ourselves as well as we think we do. In future episodes, perhaps I'll touch on some related topics like self-deception and motivated reasoning. In the meantime, please commit some unnatural acts in public. And don't forget, skepticism, though unnatural, is a virtue.